This is Jane Latour on December 21st, 2004, interviewing Joy Beer. So, Joy, after a very long day, we're doing an interview on a weeknight. After you've worked all day, taught the electricians. So, anyway, tell me a little bit about your background. Where were you born and when?
I was born and raised in Louisville, Kentucky. Uh-huh. I was born in 1958, not telling my age, so that means I'm 46 now, 46 and a half. Again, I was born and raised there. I went through my apprenticeship program in Kentucky, in Louisville. I got into the apprenticeship program there in 1979. Mm-hmm. And back then, when I got in, there was only two women that was in the trade down there. Mm-hmm. And in my class, there was five of us total. And really, I was a last minute type of thing because, you know, it had to do with percentages. And two African Americans dropped out, two African American men dropped out. Mm-hmm. So they had to pick up two more people of color, or, you know, some type of minority one way or the other. So in this case, they were able to pick me up, and then they picked up another white guy because I filled two minority slots.
Oh, wow.
So
now, what was the name of the local?
Oh, down there it was Local 369, and of course, International Brotherhood of the Electrical Workers.
Right. So. And did all the five women make it through?
Yes. Of our class, all of us made it through. We basically stuck together. Mm-hmm. You know, we did our homework together and stuff like that. So, yeah, you know, we made it all through. We all made it through. Mm-hmm. So, but the next class, they brought in like 11 women. Mm-hmm. And within the first year, like half of them dropped out. Mm-hmm. So
how did you hear about it? What drew you to that?
Truthfully, to get into the apprenticeship down there, I just happened to be looking for something else to do. Mm-hmm. So I was at the state building with, and on the directory they had apprenticeship and training. So I went in there and I was just inquiring about what is apprenticeship and training. Mm-hmm. So the person in there, they was telling me, oh, well, you know, this is what it is. This is in construction, and, you know, these are the different trades. And of course he asked me, did I know anything? I was like, I had no clue of any of these trades. Mm-hmm. And he said, well, what was your best subject? Mm-hmm. And I told him math. He said, well, since you're background, your best subject in school was math, then you should consider going into the electrical trade. Mm-hmm. So he said, just call back periodically, and then once the apprenticeship program opens up, you know, then you should apply for it. And also, he recommended that I seek out the Urban League, and mm-hmm. which once I found out about the apprenticeship program, I was application 701, and it was only taking 50 in. Then I went to the Urban League and we went through the mock interviews. That was my pre-apprenticeship. The Urban League provided me with pre-apprenticeship information and training.
And how did that apprentice program go? Were the instructors helpful?
The program was really good. We had very good instructors. You would think that they were truly teachers, and I guess you know, since it's been so long ago, I think they were all workers in the trade and stuff like that. But they taught at night because we went to school one night a week for 4 hours. Mm-hmm. The apprenticeship program is a little bit different in other cities than it is here. So
how many years did it last?
Back then it was 4 years, mm-hmm. but now it's five. Okay. And of course, you know, here it's five and a half. So
did you start working almost immediately?
Let's see,
apprentice?
Well, I didn't get into the apprenticeship, of course, until, if you remember about the, two guys dropped out and I got in. Mm-hmm. But once I got in, I think I was working within 2 weeks. Mm-hmm. So I started working in November of that year. And, you know, the class started in September. So I got in October and I started working. I started working the end of October and I was working another job, a second shift, so... Mm-hmm. You know, I was able to swing it mm-hmm. for a little while and do it for that way.
So, how were you received on the job?
Well, the first year just so happens, and you know, and I'm not trying to glorify anything or anything like that, but just so happens, my first contractor was Link Electric.
Okay.
little old German guy with his Mercedes Benz, and it was a small shop, and truthfully, it was probably one of the best things that ever happened. When I look back at things, of course, it was one of the best things that could happen. And I remember I worked with this guy, I think his name was Sturgeon or something like that. And I remember us going out on the job because he was like a service call guy. So I was riding in the truck with him every day to a different job and stuff like that. And I saw, Greenfield or BX? And I was like, I think it was BX. And he said, you know, there's Greenfield and BX. And I said, how do you tell the difference? And he said, at least 25 years of experience. I'm like, alrighty then. So, you know.
What does that mean? Greenfield.
It's basically a raceway in the trades. It's, you know, Greenfield is an empty, flexible conduit. And of course, BX is a flexible conduit, but of course, it has wires already installed in it.
Okay.
And of course, you know, it's a pre-wired raceway.
I thought it was something on the freeway.
Oh, no, not quite. So, you know, well, considering his answer, and that's about how I felt about it too, because I was like, what's the difference? So, as time went on, when I was working for him, you know, when things got slow, we would work in the shop and I was able to learn material and stuff like that. But you know, for me back then, you was a more hands-on apprentice.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you basically, wherever your mechanic was, that's where you were. Mm-hmm. So.
And do you think he took pride in teaching you? It's hard to tell.
Yeah, right. I know it is hard to tell. I think that. I was only with him a short period of time, but it's not that I can't say that he was happy about it, but at the same time, you know. He did maybe kind of sort of help a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
So it wasn't that he was just totally, totally against it, but at the same time, you could tell he wasn't that enthused either. So, but, you know, that's how it goes. Mm-hmm.
Now, they must have really had a push on if they told you about the electrical program.
Well, back then, that was when the mandate came down, and, you know, they were looking to now get into affirmative action, you know, we're more stringent on the
real affirmative action.
Yeah, exactly.
Something.
Yeah, real affirmative action. Will. So, exactly. So, and I know, like up here in New York, the first year that they took women in was in 1978.
Mm-hmm.
But I know down there they had one woman that was in. I came in 1979, so they had one woman that had came in 1977,
mm-hmm.
and then there was another one that was in, but she was a daughter of one of the tradesmen.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, she got in.
Inside.
Probably, track. Yeah, exactly. She got in, Lord knows, early. Mm-hmm. You know, because I think she may have been a mechanic when we got in.
Mm-hmm.
So that means that she had to get in at least in 75 or 74.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry. Just because you are.
Now, tell me about your family. How many siblings?
I have three sisters and two brothers.
Uh-huh.
I'm next to the youngest. And we're all scattered almost. I have a brother and sister my oldest sister's in Charlotte. My oldest brother's in Cleveland. The next sister and brother's in Louisville.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, my little sister's in Cincinnati.
So did you come from a working class family? What did your folks do?
Well, my father worked in the foundry. He worked in a factory. He worked for International Harvester. So, and of course, he was a union person until he got supervisor. He was a supervisor for International Harvester. So he got out of the union per se, because once you become a foreman in places like that, you're not in the union any longer.
But he was pro-union. He grew up in pro-union.
Yeah, more or less, yeah, in the union. And my mom didn't work until my little sister went to school. So, it was somewhat of a union family.
And how much education have you had?
Of course, graduated from high school. I've had a couple of semesters of college. And then, of course, the four-year apprenticeship training.
Right.
So,
mm-hmm.
But that's it.
Okay, so tell me... Did you feel that you were able to really master your skills in the apprenticeship program? Were you able to get the training that you needed?
I got some of the I could have learned a lot more, mm-hmm. you know, and again, you know, I can blame other people and stuff like that. I can, but I also have to blame myself because I'm not a truly pro-aggressive type of person. Mm-hmm. I am somewhat passive. I really am. And, you know, and I'm not gonna lie about that. So, you know, I was one of those. And then also, you know, it's like you just go with the flow. You know, you try not to make waves because of you being in a woman in the trade, you want to make sure that you're able to get through without, you know, not being labeled as somebody that's a rabble rouser or something like that, mm-hmm. anything like that. So I was somewhat passive. So, but we all stuck together. So it was sort of like it worked more for us in numbers mm-hmm. than us individually. So, you know, whatever we did, we all did, mm-hmm. you know, whatever we wanted, you know, that type of stuff. But at the same time, we was out on the job, we were truly never really on the same job with each other, mm-hmm. us women. Mm-hmm. I think it was one job that we were doing back down there. It was the Galleria. And me and my friend Beverly, the first black woman to get in, Beverly Bachelor, she was the first black woman to get into the trade down there. And we were on the same job site, but of mm-hmm. course different contractors, so we weren't really working together. But because we were just like near each other, that was enough in itself.
Like, yes,
yeah, yes, you know, we could at least meet up for lunch or something, you know. So, you know, that's mm-hmm. really where it was. You know, every once in a while we would run into each other, but overall it was like I was on the east side of town, they was on the west side of town, the other one's on the north, on the south, that type of stuff. Mm-hmm. You know, only on the big jobs did we maybe see another one. But overall, it was you could count us on one finger.
So tell me about when you went to work as a journeyman. First of all, did you have a graduation ceremony?
We did. We had like a little graduation awards. Mm-hmm. Wait a minute, did we? No, only when we got out of school. Okay. Once we finished our apprenticeship program, yeah. we had like a little dinner. Mm-hmm. But because you get your journey person status after school and work hours, mm-hmm. you know, yeah. it all depends on the work hours also. So I finished school in June of 84, and I didn't get my card until like September, October of 84. So, mm-hmm.
so then you went to work as a journey person.
Yeah, I went to work as a journey person.
And was there a difference between seeking? I mean, I realize this isn't New York City we're talking about. What town were you in?
I was in Louisville, Kentucky.
Louisville.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah, the biggest city in Kentucky.
So, but it still ain't New York.
No, it's not. It's like Staten Island.
So, you know. So
one of the boroughs.
Was there a big difference between trying to get work as a journey person versus apprenticeship?
Well, again, the thing of it is, that's the good thing about the union apprenticeship program and the union being in IBEW is that you don't have to go looking for. Mm. You go to the hall, you sign the book. And based off of where, you know, if I'm number 10, mm-hmm. they got 9 jobs, they I don't get called that mm-hmm. day. So basically, mm-hmm. It's based off of you being positioned on the book, wherever position you're on the book.
So
unless there's a special
fair.
Skill or something.
It wasn't like filled with yeah. discrimination.
Yeah, no.
Okay.
You know, once you got to the job, it's a different story. But
okay,
you know,
so how but, was that once you got to the
well,
job?
Well, it was
various experiences, right?
Well, I mean, you have to remember because, I turned out in September, October, 84, and I went to work with Henderson Electric.
Is that a big company?
They were one of the biggest companies uh-huh. in Louisville, yeah. And, like, they were formed in like 1919 or something.
Oh, yeah.
Well, I remember because mm-hmm. the little things that I got from the job, that's the only reason why I know that. But they were a fair shop, per se. You know, I worked for them, and I was working on a job, and, you know, they were the type of contractor, as long as they kept you, you know, you always had a job. Mm-hmm. But you did not leave that company, because if you left that company, it was like you were stabbing them in the back.
Yeah.
So, you know, they could stab you in the back, but you couldn't stab them in the back. So, that was the the perception of that company, but the company was somewhat fair. Mm-hmm. I didn't have any real issues with them. Mm-hmm. Not the company per se, because it's you can't always blame it on the company. It's usually the knuckleheads that you're working around. Yeah. So
you ran into some knuckleheads.
Yeah. Please.
Now what was
every year I had a knucklehead.
When you look at it, I mean, what was the biggest problem? I mean, race versus gender or both?
Well, exactly. It all depends on what day it was. It all depends on who I was dealing with.
Yeah.
Because I had this one guy that I came on the job, and of course he had worked with a woman before, one of the women before, and he was like, and of course he didn't like that woman. Mm-hmm. So of course, since he didn't like her and he didn't like her work ethics and stuff like that, he automatically categorized mm-hmm. me as her.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, what was her name? And he said, her name. I said, what is my name? And he said, my name. And I said, that's the first difference right there. Mm-hmm. So, you can't hold me accountable for how she was.
Mm-hmm.
Good, bad, otherwise.
Right.
Because I could be a bad mechanic and she was a good mechanic, and now all of a sudden you're going to say that, oh, all of them are bad because I'm bad? Or then, of course, it would have been all of them are good until you run into the bad one. So, but
did you penetrate? Did he?
Well, no. Oh, yeah. That caught on. And then, of course, we were working a little while longer. And then, of course, he said that he was working in a certain neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, somebody stole his tools. And I was like, well, what neighborhood was that? And, of course, he told me the neighborhood. And I said, well, I don't live over there. So what's that got to do with me? Here we go again. So then, of course, I tried to explain that one to him. And, of course, that we went on for a couple of more hours or something like that, because this is all in one day.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, I'm left-handed, so, of course, I must have did something backwards or whatever. And he was like, oh, my gosh. And I was like, if I can't win for losing with you, because first it was because I was a woman, then because I'm black, and now because I'm left-handed. So, what's next? So, all you're looking for is a reason not to give me credit for what I can do or to blame me for something. So, what is it? So I was like, yeah, whatever. Moving on.
But that's the kind of approach you would take, like a logical, try to argue it out with them.
Well, no, not argue, because I ain't trying to argue with nobody. I'm like, I would try to reason with them. And if you don't listen to reason, who's the stupid one here?
Mm-hmm.
And that's really my, for lack of art, in this case, who's the ignorant here?
Mm-hmm.
So, because it's not stupidity, it's ignorance. So,
so you work pretty consistently.
Yeah, no, I worked pretty consistently. It took me 4.5 years to finish a 4-year apprenticeship program. 4.5, almost 5 years. So.
And then when did you come to New York City?
I came here in April of 1985.
And what led you to the big city?
My ex-husband and work.
Okay.
So, just so happens I had met my ex-husband when I was on vacation, and things have slowed up. Truthfully.
You mean, well, he wasn't your ex then, though?
No, he wasn't.
He was your
ex. Yeah, he was. Yeah, I had met him then. I had met him when I was on vacation.
Uh-huh.
And things had slowed up in Louisville. So, and I knew people that were already working here uh-huh. from Louisville.
Okay. And from your local?
Yeah, from my local, uh-huh. right. And they said, oh, you should come up here. They need people so desperately.
I'm trying to remember what the economy was like in 85. That was right after a big down depression.
Yeah, because the down was, I think, in 79. Around in that time.
But that was...
Yeah, 85. Well, because the first job I had was the Jacob Javits Company.
Oh, wow. So, oh, that's interesting.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Because I didn't think I would get on it. That was because my ex-husband's sister's husband, his brother-in-law, was on that job, and he was like, oh, it'd be great if you, because he was a 10, I thought, sheet metal worker.
Oh, yeah.
He said, oh, it'd be great if you could get on this job. And I was like, yeah, right, I'm gonna come up here, you know, of all the jobs, the
really
of all the places, they're gonna send me to Jacob Javits Convention Center, sure. So of course, I was like one of the first ones in the hall that morning, mm-hmm. you know, because you had to request to come up here, and Local 3 had to say mm-hmm. that you could come up here. Oh, yeah. They would have it basically
limited
approved.
Limited number of
mm-hmm,
number of travelers, or did they call
you know
them
what
travelers?
It was? Yeah, travelers. The reason why they did that, and I have no problem with what they did, is because what they would do is that they would look at the record of the people that came from your local. And if they didn't have any issues with them, you know, as long mm-hmm. as they weren't, well, again, this is an unwritten, mm-hmm. you know,
yeah.
just in case.
Right.
Okay. this is how I looked at it. Mm-hmm. I'll just put it that way.
Right.
As long as they didn't have any issues with them, they didn't mm-hmm. have any problems with them,
yeah.
they, not a problem. But if you had somebody from your local that gave them problems, then they probably would not accept right. you to come up here. And so the people, there was only like four or five guys up here from Louisville. Mm-hmm. And they didn't have any issues with them. Everybody was doing what they were supposed to do, doing their work and stuff. And they didn't have no problems or nothing like that. Mm-hmm. You know, no fights on the job, nobody, yeah. you know, jumping off buildings, anything crazy. So they accepted me. They said, sure, you can come up
so,
here.
So you got to work at the Javits, and what were you doing there?
When I first got on the job, Bob Jones, my foreman, oh, couldn't ask for a better foreman. We were on
and
the roof.
And what company was it?
Comstock.
Okay.
We were working for LK Comstock. We were working on the roof. We had to install 45,000 feet of pipe for AC controls mm-hmm. and all that type of stuff. Mm-hmm. All the pipe work on mm-hmm. the roof. I was in the crew that did all of that. So from May until October, we was on the roof just mm-hmm. doing pipe work. It was a really nice, you know.
Yeah.
And we, you know, we would get there early. We would work from, you know, we basically would do the physical work from like 7 in the morning to like 12 mm-hmm. until lunchtime.
Mm-hmm.
And then because after that, it was hot. It was mm-hmm. it was hot up there. So then we would prep for the next day.
Mm-hmm.
So we basically would do all our measurements and stuff like that, do our racks and all that type of stuff. And then so the next morning, we could blitz and blow with the pipe.
Mm-hmm.
And then by 12 o'clock, we could then prep for the next day mm-hmm. because after 12 o'clock, you didn't want to be trying to
yeah.
put no hot pipe together.
Hot
so.
Tin roof.
Yeah, hello, you know?
So, how many people were in your crew about?
Basically, there was like a crew of 10.
And you were the only woman?
I think I was the only one uh-huh. in the crew. Every once in a while, we would get help from another crew or something, and they would come up.
Uh-huh.
But that job, it was a great job because we had like, at the peak, we had like 9 women electricians.
Wow.
Just the women uh-huh. electricians yeah. alone. That's why
Evan Redderman, I think, worked.
Evan was there. Yes. The first, when I got there, Melinda Hernandez
okay.
was there. I was like, oh my gosh. You know, and there was two apprentices, Debbie and Naomi.
Mm-hmm.
I know Naomi's not in the trade anymore, mm-hmm. but I don't know about Debbie. But they were two apprentices and then Melinda. And they were, and then I came to the job. But you know, there was people there before. There was women mm-hmm. there before I got there because Veronica was on the job. Veronica Rose from Aurora.
Okay,
mm-hmm. She was on the job before, you know, she was off the job before I came up.
Mm-hmm.
But we were there and Evan was on that job.
Mm-hmm.
And we had a couple of other, we had like 3 women out of towners from Portland, Oregon and Dallas, Texas there. Brenda, Joanne, and Donna,
mm-hmm.
they were there also. Then we had Beth.
Beth Goldman?
Is it Goldman? Goldberg?
I think
it's
Golden.
Okay. Goldberg. Well, Beth was on the job. Beth, Evan, Melinda, me, Donna, Joanne, Brenda, Debbie, Naomi, and who else came to that? Right now, those are the ones that mm-hmm. I know right offhand.
And did you see each other? Did you have lunch?
Oh, yeah.
Did you? Yeah.
Girl, please. That was like, once we all had lunch, we all went to the women's shanty for lunch. you know, because we didn't see each other on the job because you know how big the Jackson Convention Center is. So, you know, we were spread out all over the place. But overall, at lunchtime we was there, you know, of course in the morning, in the evening, and at lunch, you know, maybe if
so
we
you
were
had
close
your
enough.
Own shanty. So I have a wonderful picture of Evan and a shanty with two other women. One, I think, is Bruni Hernandez. Mm-hmm. Did you know Bruni?
Yeah, I knew Bruni, yeah.
And so did she work on that job?
I don't think so. Uh-huh. I don't.
But there are three women are in the shanty and they're reading the newspaper.
I don't think
so. It
Bruni
probably
was
wasn't
there.
The Javits.
Yeah. I don't
okay.
Think she
so,
was there.
Yeah. So there was a lot of overtime connected with the
after. It wasn't in the beginning. It wasn't. Uh-huh. But I know.
But as the deadline came.
Yeah. After October, I think it was in the wintertime. Mm-hmm. It was. Yeah, it was in wintertime. We was mm-hmm. working 7-Elevens on that job. 7 days a week, 11 hours a day. So
it was exhausting.
And I made sure I made every I was there every day for that. Every day. I didn't miss I missed maybe 2 hours the last day of that. But after that whole stretch of overtime, I was there every day. But there was a little bit of time on that job. It was a nice job.
Now I know there was a lot of corruption associated with, but you know that wasn't.
Oh,
part
I have,
of, you know,
I have no idea.
No.
You know, because I'm just working.
You were working.
Yeah, you know, of course you would hear stuff, but at the same time, I didn't
doing the job.
Exactly.
Yeah. So now, let's see where we are. Tell me about in terms of satisfaction of being an electrician. What are the sources of satisfaction?
Me
what do you like about it? Yeah.
What do I like about it?
Mm-hmm.
When you hit the switch, the light comes on. Seriously. When you hit the switch, the light comes on. Mm-hmm. When you hit the circuit breaker, the circuit works. It's wired correctly. Mm-hmm. You don't hear a pop. You don't hear a boom. You hear pops and stuff. You get issues. But as long as you don't hear nothing.
Yeah.
You know?
Uh-huh. And it's the feeling that you build something.
Yeah, exactly.
Something
it's just a satisfying feeling of being able to put it together from scratch and it works when it's all over. Mm-hmm. And that's really one of the biggest things. One of the biggest things is like, I did this. You know, because now, you know, I don't have any children, but I worked on this job.
Yeah.
I worked on Battery Park. I worked on two of the buildings at Battery Park. I worked at North River, I worked at Red Hook, you know, I worked at City College, I worked at Bronx Lebanon Hospital, you know, all of these places I could just say, you know, I was here, exactly, you know, all kind of stuff.
So when you were growing up, what did you used to think that you were going to be?
Huh?
When you were growing up, when you were a little
you know,
girl.
Truthfully, what I wanted to, and this was after I got older, I wanted to be a teacher.
Oh yeah,
I wanted to be a teacher.
Now you are.
Exactly, I really am right now. You know, so to a degree, I'm still able to do what I wanted to do, and I'm still doing what I like to do.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm able to do both.
Tell me about membership in the IBEW. Now, as a contractor, you're still a member.
Oh yeah, I shelved my court once I get my license. I shelved my card, but I still pay yearly union dues to the international, so I'm able to carry this.
And what's the benefit of that?
I can always go back into it if I ever want to.
Uh-huh.
And the benefits that they carry, the international carries for each individual worker, like death benefits and some type of insurance and that type of stuff. Mm-hmm. You know, other little perks that they have.
You know, one of the issues, well, what about, just let's, before we switch from that, because I just thought of another question, but membership in the IBEW in terms of women, and how would you rate the union's responses to issues that women have had
over
you been involved
time?
With?
I'm not as involved as I used to be, especially now being a contractor, I'm not as involved as I used to be, because, you know, being an electrician being involved and being a contractor being involved is two totally different things.
But you have been over.
I used to be,
to be.
And, you know, of course, things didn't happen as quickly as they could have happened.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, you know, they did happen, But there's still things that they, you know, they can still work on. Mm-hmm.
You know, such so. As?
It all boils down to the benefits. It all boils down to benefits, really. Because the working conditions, basically, they're here, mm-hmm. New York, because I can't speak for Kentucky anymore,
right.
Louisville. They're up to snuff. Mm-hmm. You know, basically, they're up to snuff. But, of course, you know, you still have your prejudices. You still have your inconsistencies here and there. But overall, when you're dealing with the bigger jobs and stuff like that, you don't have as many issues. You know, and when it really comes down to it, it still boils down to the people in the job, mm-hmm. because yeah. they're the ones that make the job. Okay. So,
an issue for electricians, I would think, would be safety.
Always.
Big issue.
So, and you know, and of course, you know, you have your contractors. Of course, I'm excluded from that. You have your contractors that want you to get the job done. They aren't worried about you and stuff like that. But the thing of it is that, and which is what I teach in school. It's like, you know, of course they can make life hard for you if you don't do it the way that they want to do it. But you know what? They cannot bring your life back to you. They cannot bring a limb back to you. They cannot bring your life.
No, we were talking about safety.
Oh, but the bottom line is that if something happens to you on the job, you know, safety is, a job is as safe as you make it, mm-hmm. you know. So if you don't get what you need to get the job done in a workmanlike, in a safe manner, then if something goes down, you know, of course they have the benefits and stuff like that and all that, but can it really, it will never really bring back mm-hmm. what you've lost.
It's real dangerous, you know, stuff.
If something minor, mm-hmm. that's exactly what it is.
Yeah.
But if something major happens, you know, it's a wrap.
Yeah. So you have a feeling, you feel confident working with electricity?
Yeah. It's all about respect. Mm-hmm. You learn to respect it. Mm-hmm. You know, of course, when something blows or something, I jump just like the next
yeah,
person.
Yeah.
I may not jump as far, but I still jump. Because it's still, you know, when something like that happens, it's still a surprise.
Yeah, yeah.
But at the same time, when it comes to working around it and stuff, you just have to learn how to respect it. And, you know, and know the properties, the basics of what will happen mm-hmm. and how to do things. And that's one of the biggest things about the IBEW is that they basically teach you how to do it safely mm-hmm. and right. And which really, it's sort of like hand in hand. And they're, well, and which what I teach my students is that learn how to do it right
mm-hmm.
and then you learn how to do it fast. You don't learn how to do it fast and then you learn how to do it right. Because mm-hmm. no matter how fast you are, if it ain't right,
mm-hmm.
how fast were you? Mm-hmm. But as long as you learn how to do it right and do it in a safe and workmanlike manner, mm-hmm. there's no, you know,
right.
it shouldn't be a problem. Then it goes into the era of the manufacturer or conditions or mm-hmm. something like that. Mm-hmm. But as long as you do what you're supposed to do, then you don't have to worry about it. I mean, you know, not to, you know,
right.
then those outside factors come into play. Then, you know,
yeah.
it goes mm-hmm. back to, mm-hmm. you know, it's a God thing then.
So I wanted to talk about breaking through the glass ceiling for women. And were you a foreman? Were you,
no,
no. never been a foreman?
Well, that was because I'm not from New York, so
okay.
I wouldn't never expect to be a foreman up here.
So you still have your book from Louisville?
I have a withdrawal card, so basically
yeah.
I...
Okay. But did you ever get membership in, because you've lived here a long time?
No. I always pay my dues to my local dues through my local in Louisville.
Okay.
And of course, the international is international.
Mm-hmm. Right. So now, how did it come about that you set up Derby Electric? And he became a contractor.
To tell you the truth, I was the electrical inspector for the city.
Oh, you
know,
you were.
Because yeah, what happened is that I was working for Local 3, and things were starting to get slow. Or before they started getting slow, I was like, you know, eventually, because you know everything's in cycles, everything's
right.
cyclical.
Sure.
So I was like, let me try to find something else now. So I started working for City College. as a maintenance electrician. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, but I just
missed... Did you have to take a civil service?
I had just missed the city test.
Oh, okay.
So, but, you know, up at City College up in Harlem, it was hard to get people up there because, you know, nobody wanted to go to Harlem back then. So, of
course... Such a nice campus.
Yeah, right, exactly. Yeah. And that's where I started. I went, started going back to school again, mm-hmm. too, for teaching. Uh-huh. So, because they have a very good teaching college. So, I went to work up there, but when the next test came around, people took the test. I didn't take it, the results from the test that they had just given, now they were starting to call people, mm-hmm. and of course, people started picking City College, so I got bumped out.
Okay.
So I got bumped out of there, and then I wrote a letter back to Local 3, and that was when things were starting to go back down. Mm-hmm. I wrote a letter back to Local 3, but of course, I didn't really expect to go back to work because things were back on a downslope now, where unemployment was starting to pick up, and of course, an unwritten rule in the IBEW is that, you know, you man your jurisdiction first, mm-hmm. and since I'm not from this jurisdiction, I didn't expect to work here. So, but they, you know, because with Local 3, they, you know, if you are on the book, they will put you to work. So they don't have a two-book system like other cities. Other cities, you have book one, which all the local people sign, and then they have book two, which all the travelers are out of town assigned. Mm-hmm. Here in New York, they only have one book per se, but it's all computerized. Yeah. So, and so I wrote the letter telling them, you know, I would love to be employed with them again because I wrote a letter when I left, mm-hmm. And they sent me back to work, which I was surprised about because I was like, I didn't think they would send me back to work. Mm-hmm. So I started working again, and that's when I was working at Bronx Lebanon for. Who was I for? Lori and Donna. And then I was working, for Lori and Donna. That was, and Fishback and Moore. That was the last job before I became inspector. So I was working for them still, but I was like, you know, I really need to get out because things are slow. Mm-hmm. Local 3 guys got to work. And I'm not trying to get in the middle of that type mm-hmm. of stuff, you know. And also, it's like, you're out of town, we get people unemployed. What are you doing here?
Right.
And I was like, I gotta get out because I ain't trying to get busted up, you know?
Yeah.
So, I was going to Mechanics Institute and this guy, one of the teachers, Mr. Amos.
Were you studying there?
Drafting. Engineering drafting. So yeah. Oh yeah, great school. For, you wouldn't believe how much you learn from that school, and, mm-hmm. you know, and back then it was only like $50 a year. Mm-hmm. So, but anyway, but you had to be in the trades to get into mm-hmm. the school. So Mr. Amos, Peter Amos, he used to work for Con Ed, he retired. He told me, oh, well, you know, you should join the electrical inspectors, the organization, the association. And I was like, oh, okay. So he brought me in, you know, he's like, oh, he brought me the paperwork and, you know, of course, you know, Lou Reagan recommended you and I put his name down.
Uh-huh.
So then I joined the organization. And so I was going to the meetings and stuff. And then one year, 1991, January of 91, they have a dinner for the election of officers. And of course, the head people from BEC, Bureau of Electrical Control, Morris Comey, Frank Coluccio, and was Mr. Bunk there? I don't know if Mr. Bunk was there or not. But still, you know, they were at the meeting. And John Kinney, of course. So they were at the meeting. They was like, oh, well, you should try to become an electrical inspector. And I was like, oh, okay. And they said, well, come down tomorrow. And of course, they said, come and fill out applications. So I was there the next day. I went there the next day. And of course, they were like, who are you? Oh, yeah. And, you know, because when I went in, I went to see, and the first person I saw was Mackenzie, and he was like, oh, how you doing? And all that type of stuff. So I was like, here, I'm here, just fill out that application. And of course, they were slightly surprised. Well, not Mackenzie, but they were surprised that I came down the next day. So I put in my application, and then, you know, as time went on, test came up.
Okay. And you took it?
And, well, really their test was basically based off of your experience. They graded you off of your experience and stuff like that. So since that came up, I filed for that and made sure I put in for that. Mm-hmm. So I was able, then this way I was now on a list. I was really, really on the list. Mm-hmm. But they hired me anyway before. They hired me in November of 91. I went to work for them in November 91. So, and that was a really great job. You know, all the people on the job and stuff. And I really love that job. I love being an inspector. So, being
an inspector. What was great about it?
Well, one, because you were somewhere, because basically as an electrical inspector, what you do is that you go to different jobs that contractors, because everything done electrically in the city has to be filed for.
Okay.
You have to put an application with the city, and we come out and inspect it. So every day I was in a different, on a different job site, at a different job looking, because basically what I had to do was make sure that they did what they said they was going to do, and based off the national, in this case, the New York City code. So
you were reading that code?
Yeah, so between reading the code, interpreting the code, going through the Electrical Inspectors Association, and, you know, doing my job, and with the training and stuff like that, I went through training and everything. That's how I got to know the code more so, and then of course with being on the job. So, and every day, like I said, you know, it was every day. It was I would be on union jobs, I would be on non-union jobs, I would be on big jobs, I'd be on small jobs. It was just a great thing. It really was. It really was. So, so I met these guys that were in business, and they were like, oh, well, you know, they had an older guy that was their licensee, and they were like, oh, well, you know, maybe you should. They take the license test and you could be the licensee for our company. I was like, not a problem. So I signed up to take the class. You know, they have a prep class for the license. So I signed up for that, and their licensee, he was an older gentleman, and he was on his last leg because he died. He ended up dying in November of the year that I started taking the class. So unfortunately, they weren't able to sustain the business, because if you don't have a licensee, you can't do business, really. So, and of course, you renew every December, so, for the next year. And of course, he died in November, so they could not renew for the next year, so they really couldn't stay in business, per se. They could only finish what they had started. So they weren't able to stay in business. So since they weren't able to stay in business, you know, they did what they had to do just to keep working and stuff. So when that happened, I was like, well, now I got to start my own business. Mm-hmm. So, and that's how I started my own business.
So how was that test? Was it?
Well, when I took it, it was a two-part test. It was a written test and a hands-on test. Mm-hmm. And of course, the written test was 50 questions, multiple choice, and 5 essays. And if you didn't pass the 50 multiple choice, they didn't even grade the 5 essays.
Yeah.
And Cynthia took that test with me. Mm-hmm. Me and Cynthia, we went to the class together. Mm-hmm. So
did Cynthia pass?
No. I don't know. Yeah, she didn't. She didn't pass the written for some reason. I don't know why. Cause, you know, we were, like I said, we were there together. We were studying together. So I don't know what happened.
So you put a lot into studying for.
Oh yeah, no, about $3,000. You know, but I did most, see, I'm one of those where I really only study when I'm in class, because if I'm not in a studying environment, then I really won't study.
Right.
So, so I did that. I did the multiple choice, you know, and at first, when I first started the class, I was like, oh yeah, I'm going to ace this, yada, yada, yada. By the time I got through that class, I was like, please just let me pass. I passed the first half. And then, of course, you go through, now you go into the second half to practice for the hands-on, which was another 5-part test, which was stop-start station, lights, three-way, two-way, three-way switching, panel connection, blueprint reading, and something else. I forget. Stop, start, job, blueprint, the lights, the panel, and something else. I forget what it was.
So how was that?
Thank goodness I studied at the school. goes, if I hadn't went through that electrical course with Lenny Feinberg?
At what school? IBEW?
No. This is a personal, National Electrical Training Course, which is on 30th
And you have to pay for that?
Yeah. But it's like a prep course for the license. Yeah. And they do it very good, though. Yeah. Very good. Oh, my gosh. So I, truthfully, if you're going to take the test, I would recommend that you take the course. Because, you know, but you know what the thing of it is that we had engineers and stuff in there. And you would... You could tell by the people that went through the course and the people that didn't go through the course. Because when you went into the test, the people within the first half an hour, the people that got up and walked out were the people that didn't take that course. You could tell. Because they would look at that test and like, oh, forget it. They just threw it up in there and just walked out.
Yeah.
And the people that took the course were basically the ones that stayed. Mm-hmm. But the people, the engineers and those type of people, they tend not to pass because it's very, they keep it very basic, you know, the KISS system. Mm-hmm. Keep it simple, stupid. Mm-hmm. Just keep it simple. Just, you know, and they want it to be so technical about it. It's not technical. It's very basic. Mm-hmm. And that was the thing, so. But after all of that, and I went through the class, so I started the business. So.
And what year did you start it?
I incorporated July 7th, 1995, and I got my license September the 26th of 95. September 26th of 95.
And did you take a lot of classes or courses or try to find out about
business?
Yeah.
I took an estimating course through the same class that I took the training. I went to different agencies, you know, because there's so many agencies out here. You know, the city alone has so many different types of agencies that you can go and learn about business. You know, of course, one of the first ones was SBA, of course. You know, the Feds, right. SBA. I went to them.
Small Business Administration. Mm-hmm.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. I went to them. I went to, let's see, who else did I go to? Because, you know, that was really one of the major ones was SBA. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, I went to the different agencies like DASNY, School Construction Authority, Port Authority, MTA, who else am I thinking? You know, just the state, you know, everybody goes, you know, the city has like the Jamaica Reef Business Resource Center, you have SoBro, then you have Manhattan, Resource Center up in Harlem. You have Queens has one, Jamaica on Jamaica Avenue.
And what's the function of all of these places?
Basically, they also help you with your startup. And there was another one because I used to go over to Hunter College? I went to over here on Madison Avenue where I did my business plan and all that kind of stuff. I went through them for that. I forget who it was. I think it was a city agency also. Part of the SBA, I forget, because you know, it's been 10 years. Okay. I'm supposed to forget all this stuff in 10 years. But they basically assist you with business plans, different types of financing that you can get, like the Women's Venture Fund. You can get money from them, you know, just women businesses. Mm-hmm. You can get small, like micro loans for them and stuff like that just for business startup, and just different agencies and stuff like that where you can just, you know, just all the resources of business and how to stay in business and how to do business with this entity and stuff like that. So, you know, I went through a bunch of them. I went through a few of them.
So then you started putting your services out and contracting.
Yeah, once I went and got the license, I had to start. Mm-hmm. And then I went into business with somebody else that was in the class, that were in a class behind me. He has his own company now, TMF Electric. And then, of course, the twins that I went into business, that I was in business with also, you know, we were... In business, it was not like really formal, but still, it was semi-formal. They have a company also here. So I think it's Power Source. I think it's the name of it. So yeah, Reg and Rich, they're very good. They're very good. Mm-hmm. Oh my God. You can't get that enough juice from those guys. That was one thing that really worked out really well.
Uh-huh.
Right.
So,
thank goodness.
Tell me about, what are your biggest challenges as a contractor?
Getting paid. Getting paid. Yeah. Because, you know, since I'm a woman, and of course I'm not one of those that's going to go in there and start cursing and stuff. Because, mm-hmm. See, I'm not a cursor. I've never been a cursor. Mm-hmm. I've never been somebody that, you know, that's just not my MO. Yeah. I just can't do it. Mm-hmm. Well, I could, but I would feel so bad about it. So I just don't do it. Because my mentality is, if I do the work, give me my money.
Mm-hmm.
I shouldn't have to ask you for nothing. Once I send you my invoice, you should write my check.
But it's a problem. It's a problem for all contractors.
It's a
contractor.
Yeah. It's a problem for all contractors. But because, yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Because I'm, you know, I'm not going to be one of those that come in there and, like, you know, like a man that come up in there and, like, pick you up by your collar and shake you until the money falls out of your pockets or something.
Right.
But I have considered hiring somebody like that. So I'm serious. You just don't know.
Really, it's a big problem.
Yeah, well, you know, I had a couple of people that even asked if I needed them to do that. So, because there's this one person that still owes me money.
And we're talking a lot of money, right?
Well, back then it was a lot of money. Now it's nothing.
Yeah.
But, you know, but at the same time,
still, you have to lay out the money. You have to do the job, and then
exactly,
so it's very frustrating.
So I just look at it: what comes around goes around. I just have to put it, you know, God, take care of them. Just take care of them, right?
Yeah.
I ain't gonna bother with them no more. So,
tell me about how you find doing this work as a woman. I understand that you bid on a job at the World Trade Center and you did some work there.
Yeah,
as a new,
I did on seven World Trade Center. Well, I was a sub under the prime contractor, Five Star Electric.
Five Star Electric.
Yeah,
okay.
They were the prime. Well, they were the prime for the Con Ed part of Seven World Trade Center,
okay.
Because another contractor had the rest of the building.
Mm-hmm.
But from fourth floor down, they basically they were like the starter. They were the starter contractor, mm-hmm. of their project. And I subbed under them. I did the cable tray and the lighting for them on that job. Cable tray, lighting, exit lights and stuff. Okay. So
How long did that job last?
We started in, when did we start? August to September, and we left. And the last time we was there was like June.
And
it was supposed to have been over like December, January. Yeah.
So this past year,
from 2003 to 2004.
Okay.
Yeah. So
now, do you have people who work for you? How does the work get done?
Well, yeah, that's the only way the work's going to get done. Because I'm not doing it. Well, you know, right now, things are really slow.
Mm-hmm.
So I have very few people now, but once, you know, I have a contract that the state is supposed to be signing with the prime contractor, the GC, in January. So once they sign the contract, then I'll sign a contract
there?
With them. No,
yeah.
This is out in Jamaica, Queens.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, this
what
is
project will it be?
New York State is a Department of Environmental Conservation.
Oh.
Yeah, out in Jamaica, Queens, out 180th Street and 108th Avenue, or something, right in that area.
So what will you be building? What will you be working?
We'll be supplying power for, it has to do with, again, it's environmental, so conservation. So we will be bringing the power from Con Ed in for all their equipment and stuff like that. It's it has to do with cleanup. Soil cleanup,
mm-hmm.
So they need serious power to do that type of stuff. Mm-hmm. It's amazing. They need power. It's amazing. So
that's something to look forward to.
Yeah, that will be in the middle of January, end of January.
So it's cold. Is it cold where you work? I mean,
well, that's going to be a cold job. That's going to be a cold job because that's going to be
like,
basically
once again,
outside.
You won't be doing it.
No,
you're
I'll be out there.
Here. You'll be
I'll be out there, but I'll
making sure people do it
exactly.
Right.
But I'm not going to be trying to be.
And what is it like being a boss? I mean, do you make any effort to hire women, or you try to
Find the best? Well, again, because I'm Local 3, basically,
I
put a call in, and I get who I get.
Okay, yeah.
So,
I see. Yeah.
If, you know, really what I'm going to try to do is I'm going to try to get women. I'm going to try, but at the same time, again, I put a call in, I get who I get.
Yeah.
So, but I try to get a woman foreman, but unfortunately, you have to have certain class. You had to already take certain classes like OSHA and safety and a foreman's class for you to be able to be a foreman. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, she was missing one class, so I wasn't able to pull her.
Mm-hmm.
So, but you know,
yeah.
And you know that was for the trade center. So we I did have one woman working for me a while back up when I was at Bronx in the Bronx School of Law. But besides that, so now. The next time, I figure the way it's running, most likely when I pull in a few people, I'll get another woman again. So it's
Now you were talking about if you teach in the IBEW Local 3 Apprentice Program, and how long have you been doing that?
I've been doing that almost 10 years.
Wow.
Almost as long as I started that basically right about the same time I started the business. So
and how do you like teaching there?
Love teaching. I like teaching. I like teaching there. I like because see, I teach first year, first half.
Okay.
As soon as they come in, and really, I really would rather not teach any other year because this way, when they come in,
you set them straight.
They already know.
Right.
You're gonna see women on the job, you know. And in first year, they teach sexual harassment, and of course, some people may blow through it. I spend a whole night on it. And because really that's something that you can go through in no time if you choose. But and of course I bring it up all the time. But I also tell them my experience, how I am, and how other people may be. So don't expect that everybody's going to be like me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because I'm not saying that I'm easy, but I'm not saying that I'm really tough either. So, you know, it's sort of like, take everybody individually, and that's anyone, because everybody's different.
And do you sense any kind of sea change in the young men coming in? It's just too hard to tell.
Well, you know, the only change is just because of the change, you know, just because of the days and the times, you know, the times. So, you know, it's a little bit more, women are more out there and stuff like that. So, of course, they're a little bit more knowledgeable, but at the same time, there's still misconceptions.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I try to get rid of most of the misconceptions and tell them, you know, that just because I'm a woman, I can work circles around you. You know, so don't you ever, and I tell them, I'm like, you know what, because we got to be better than you. We got to be better it really just goes back from being a woman, being a person of color. And I got to do twice as hard to get half the credit. So I keep that in my mind. It's like the forefront for me, because that's how I was raised, because that's how it was back then.
Mm-hmm.
And to a degree, it's still that way. Don't ever think that we get it made. It ain't like that. It's not. I wish, but
a lot of people.
Yeah.
Saying we have
a
race
we get,
blind, gender blind.
Oh
society.
Yeah, sure. Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
What level do they live in?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So now, what about being a model or a mentor for other women? What do you have to say about that?
Well, I also do consulting with NEW. I also teach classes in NEW.
You do.
Yeah. So
what do you teach there?
Me and Darlene Messenger, we do a shop class. We do an electrical shop class. They have a night program where we do an electrical shop class every cycle that they have. So the women get to do one day of electrical work. So, and you know, I used to teach some of the classes, but you know, Alana. You know Alana?
No.
Alana, she, oh, please. What is it? What's the name of her? Helicon. Mm-hmm. She has this math curriculum that is like off the charts.
Mm-hmm.
And we used to teach math and they picked her up to do that. So now basically what we were doing, we was doing math and then the shop. The disadvantage is that I don't get to see the students like when I had the math class.
Mm-hmm.
But because of her, her math class is just like, it's so good. I even take it.
Wow.
I took it. Yeah. So, you know, and I'm good in math, and I took her, math class, and it was, it's a really great class. But, so we teach shop.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, Darlene, she teaches, I think, Introduction to the Trades.
Mm-hmm.
But besides that, that's where, and then, of course, you know, I try to be there on every third Friday to
mm-hmm.
hang out.
To the coffee
like
house.
Yeah, exactly, so.
So, because you were never in Local 3, you really didn't organize with women electricians, or did you?
No, we had our own little organization.
You know, women electricians with Cynthia Long.
Yeah, with Cynthia, uh-huh. Melinda, mm-hmm. Beth.
And what do you have to say about that work that you did? I mean, how...
You know, of course. No, it was important because, you know, no matter what people may think, if they didn't do it and we didn't do what we did back then, you would not even be where you are now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you would not have, the conditions would not be in place the way that they are mm-hmm. now if we didn't do what we did back then. Mm-hmm. You know, me being my little passive there self, Melinda being her little in the face, Cynthia being in their face to some degree, Beth was like that, mm-hmm. you know, of course, you know, with the New Yorkers, they got the New York attitude going on, so, but still again, if we didn't do what we did, then they wouldn't have what they got,
mm-hmm.
and you know, but that's always, people don't know what they got, you know, you never know what
they
you got until you lose
went
it.
Before.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. Yeah. Go back. When I came in and deal with the mentality that I had to deal with,
mm-hmm.
you deal with the mentality that I deal with maybe one every, maybe five or six guys. But B, I was dealing with one every two.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, just think about it.
Mm-hmm.
So don't even, there's nothing they can say. There's, you know, and you know, there may be something that they could tell us, but overall, there's not much they could tell us.
Mm-hmm. So it was essential.
Yeah.
So, do you affiliate with any, like, I know that Lenore Janis has okay, so I was asking you, this is tape 2 of Joy Beard, and I was asking you about networking with other women in construction groups,
Or
NAWIC, there's another group.
Yeah, there's NABLE, there's NAWIC, there's PWC, Professional Women in Construction.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I go to some of the stuff periodically, and of course I really need, I have to join a couple of them, I have to. So, that's one thing I have to.
And you
but
have
of course
to
I haven't, because now, I guess, it's sort of like, I've been out here for so long, and it's been a struggle, right? And of course, maybe things could have been better with the other groups. But one of the reasons why I never really got into the groups and stuff like that is because, truthfully,
mm-hmm.
I looked at most of the groups as very. Superficial, somewhat. You know, not that they don't do things and stuff like that, but a lot of the women, and I hate to say this, but this is my perception of it, a lot of the women are fronts for the businesses. There's very few women that are truly business owners. You have, Janice, she's a true business owner.
Mm-hmm.
You have, like, Aurora Electric. You have the lady with Commodore Electric and then Caldwell Wingate, you know, but there's very few, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So then, and then there are some that are true
mm-hmm.
to the game, and then there's some that aren't true to the game.
Yeah.
And because I've seen so many that are not true to the game, I guess I'm like, yeah, right, yeah. Sure, whatever. So
mm-hmm.
I'm not going to get involved because I don't want to hear the BS. I don't want to hear the, you know, you're coming in, you're hanging out. You know, you're just here for show,
mm-hmm.
and if I ask you a technical question, you're like, okay, well, I'll talk to my estimator tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
What's up with that?
Mm-hmm.
So, and that's, you know, and I don't want to talk against anyone, but at the same time, that's how I saw it.
Right. Now, you just got a call before we during our interview from another woman contractor.
Yeah,
so do you from offer, support to other women?
Oh, and, yeah. No. See, like, she, second black woman to get her license for New York City, electrical contractor's license.
And what's her name? Gwen what?
Gwendolyn Reedy. Okay. Nybeck Electric. Uh-huh. She, you know, because she calls me, what's up, how you doing? And really, that's what I, she was only calling me just to see what was up, you know, and, you know, because of the holidays and stuff like that. But, you know, she would call me and I would tell her, oh, you know what, this is what you should do, this is what you should do, you know, if I have any types of questions or something like that, or if, what because I'm a union contractor and because she's just starting, she's not union yet, if I get a small job that I know I'm not paying $42 an hour for, I will swing it her way, you know, or something like that.
Yeah.
Or another black guy that I know that has a contracting out in Queens. Mm-hmm. If it's a job out in Queens, I usually call him for the smaller stuff. Yeah. And we would just swing stuff, you know, that
right.
way.
Yeah.
You know, because it has to be done. So why not you?
Yeah.
You know?
Right.
And then this way, somebody called me, I was able to get the job done for them.
Mm-hmm.
They don't care how it's done.
Right.
As long as they get their job done. You know, and in a workmanlike manner, that's all that counts. And we're all the people that I'm talking about, we're all union electricians that own businesses. So, of course, we're going to do it in a workmanlike manner because that's our mentality.
Right. Now, how is the situation for minority men? Are they, I mean, making gains?
Well, they're doing okay. It's just as hard. Well, you know, right now it's hard for everybody.
Yeah.
It's hard for everyone. Mm-hmm. But of course, for people of color, women and people of color, it's like it's real tough.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, usually we're the small contractors, and of course, we need to get paid on time, and people don't want to pay us on time. And of course, without not getting paid on time, then of course, here we go, because the insurance is ridiculous. Mm-hmm. Totally, totally ridiculous. I paid $36,000 last year just for liability insurance for the company. So, you know.
You have to get paid.
Yeah, exactly. You know, that's somebody, that's one person working in the office, $36,000.
Wow.
You know, and that was only based off of, how much was the payroll for that? You know, because it's based off payroll.
Mm-hmm.
You're talking maybe like $500,000 of payroll, $600,000 payroll, something like that. Mm-hmm. So, you know, and I have to look forward to that every year. If my payroll, you know, this year, because it was a slower year, my insurance, of course, is going to be lower.
Yeah.
But once my payroll goes back up to $500,000 again, then I'm going to be putting out $36,000, $40,000 worth of insurance. Liability insurance alone, that's not including workman's comp. So I got to get paid on time, you know, in a timely fashion. You know, and I can't be bankrolling jobs, not like the big contractors.
Yeah.
You know, they got credit lines out the wazoo.
Yeah.
I'm not in that position, you know? I'm not in that position. You know, the mistakes we make early in life is we pay for them eventually, so it's just a matter of what you pay for them.
Mm-hmm.
And in my case, so, sacrifices we make. But that's one of the things with us, is that we get to get paid as soon as possible.
Yeah.
You know, and
pressure,
of course they don't. And of course they don't want to pay us as soon as
mm-hmm.
we're the little guy. Yeah. We're the last ones to get paid. So,
you know, one thing. This isn't on the. But before I ask you the last question, I want to ask you another question, which is, you know, we go to all these meetings about trying to get women jobs, and the big problem seems to be that people aren't hiring women, and they can't get on the jobs, and. The other
talking about is in like with
it's
them
in New York City,
like that.
You know, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And some of them have tremendous problems, like with the plumbers, and you know, and it's not fair, like the electricians; they don't have the same kind of system. But one thing that never seems to happen is that with the Office of Federal Contract Compliance, they never seem to withhold any payment because somebody's not in compliance. I mean, it seems pretty fairly easy to show that. Well, I did this, I did that, and therefore good faith, and therefore, you know.
Right. I know one of, like, Daphne is cracking down on it very hard, and the FCA is starting to get into that also.
And where what they is
hold Dormitory Authority of the State of New York. They're cracking down on that. SCA is getting pretty good at that also.
And what's SCA?
School Construction Authority.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay.
They're starting to pick up.
Because I've heard tales over years.
Yeah, no, well, yeah.
They
see,
were
that's
always
what,
going to. They had this project something and project whatever.
They have a mentor program, which I belong to.
Oh, okay.
And basically, you know, the major contractors pick you up and they mentor you, show you the ropes and stuff like that, which, of course, I should have been in a long time ago, but don't get me started. But, they're picking up on that. They're now, if you don't comply, you don't get your money.
Okay, now do you think that has anything to do with the new chancellor of the city?
Of course, he has something to do with it. Mm-hmm. Bloomberg has something to do with it. It's just the times, because they, you know, because when you have set-aside programs and stuff like that, and when the contractors, they're like, oh, we can't find anyone. Why can't you find anyone? And that's the reason why we don't want to work for you. Why would we want to work for you if we can't get paid? You know? And we have no recourse. You want us on, you have set aside for us, but at the same time, they're holding our monies back and you aren't doing anything for us. So why would we come and work on your project if you aren't doing anything for me? So
you see a little progress in this mentoring program.
The mentoring program, oh my gosh. I just went to a meeting with them just last week, and they are allocating $115 million for this year's budget for just MWBEs, MWBSL, all the
what does that mean?
M, of course, is minority. W is women. Okay. D is disadvantaged. L is locally based.
Okay.
So all of those different type of companies, they're setting aside $115 million on SCA for SCA work just alone.
Okay.
And the thing with this is that they're really going after breaking it up to distribute the monies so much.
And these contractors that will come in, might this be a source of employment for some women who can't find work elsewhere?
Well, when you talk about women, you talk about contractors, or you just talk about women?
You talk about, like, trying to
shape
for these contractors.
Yeah, and remember, shaping is not, they don't do that in electrical, okay?
Yeah.
But still, again,
I'm just thinking plumbers.
Yeah, I know, and the carpenters.
Yeah.
There's a possibility for, because again, they have the companies where you have the percentages for the set-asides, and they also have it for the workers themselves, because Seven World Trade Center was the same thing. Mm-hmm. The forms I had to fill out just for that was tremendous. But, you know, fortunately, me being a black-owned company, and basically my workforce was like 90, I think it never went under 86% of people of color or women. So they love me.
Yeah.
But overall, the potential is there, but at the same time, and I'm not trying to be a smart aleck or nothing, but if you ain't performing, then I don't want you on my job anyway. I'm glad you are. So don't be going out there trying to shape a job and you don't have any skill, talent, and ability to back it up.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really the bottom line. Mm-hmm. You know, because I've always been, you know, and like I said, I'm pro-women, mm-hmm. pro-black, mm-hmm. pro, you know, left-handed.
Okay.
But if you don't have the skill, talent, and ability, I don't need you. Mm-hmm. I really don't need you. Yeah, I'll drop you in a heartbeat.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Maybe I'll give you a little bit of leeway, but overall, because I have given a couple of people a little bit of leeway, but overall,
mm-hmm.
if you're not performing, you got to go.
Right.
Because the bottom line is the bottom line.
That's right.
So if you can't make money for me, then I don't need you. So.
Tell me about your thoughts on equal employment opportunity and affirmative action now in 2004.
They got rid of a lot of it. You know, the city's just not bringing it back. The feds, they got rid of a lot of it. You know, there is advantage and disadvantage to Republicans. So, you know, don't Don't get me started. But, you know, there's advantage and then there's a disadvantage to that. But the thing of it is because so many people have abused it, mm-hmm. that's the reason why they basically try to get rid of it, because a lot of people have abused it. Like I said, there's a lot of women-owned businesses where these women don't have a clue. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So you have women-owned businesses, but where's the woman?
Yeah.
She's sitting in the office.
Not like you who came up through the trades and took all these courses and
built it. You know, you're just somebody's wife or mm-hmm. somebody's girlfriend or somebody's daughter or whatever, mm-hmm. and you're just sitting there looking cute. Mm-hmm. I forgot to turn it off.
Joy, I just want your thoughts on where you think women are at, and we've made improvements, but...
Of course we made improvements, and of course I may be a little bit of an optimist too. We made improvements, of course we have. The thing of it is that you still have people that are narrow-minded, you know, because, you know, people say that there's no, you know, we live in a, I don't know who says this, because yeah. I can't understand why they would say it anyway. We live in a colorblind,
gender-blind,
and I mean, they must be out of their mind. Mm-hmm. So. Of course, yes, of course, we've done better, but then, of course, there's still things that have to be done. Because, you know, there's still things like when it comes to benefits, you know, they still aren't fair with the total benefit package. And other trades are worse. Truthfully, the electricians are really the best trade, I think, when it comes to improvements and advancements and all that type of stuff. Really, I think I'm the wrong person to talk to, because the electricians are really like the best trade mm-hmm. When it comes to all that type of, but of course I'm an electrician, so I don't think that, you know. But
I agree.
I think we have, when it comes to IBEW, they have basically done more than any other trade out there when it comes to that, when it comes to women, people of color, whatever. So. But of course, you know, there's still things that need to be done. Really, it's really education when it comes to the workers, because those are the ones that you still have the issues with. You know, of course, you still have your contractors and stuff, but the people on the job, that's what they're out there for, is to tell the company who the best people are, who aren't the best people, you know, who we should keep, who we shouldn't keep, and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. So. You know, and that's where you got to start with the education there.
Mm-hmm. So. Well, speaking of education, you know, it seems to me that young girls, it's hard for them to visualize a career, that they don't really have any sense that women are out there, and women are succeeding in it.
Yeah, and with, you know, and that's one thing I can say about New. They had been reaching out, like, at junior high and high schools. You know, junior, because really, that you got to catch them early. You got to at least give them the information early. So then, when they start making the hard choices, mm-hmm. then that could be one of the choices. You know, mm-hmm. that could be an option. Mm-hmm. One of the options of, well, you know, I can always do this too. You know, you don't have to be, you know, like hardcore or how the guys think in the trade, like, if, you know, you could only be in the trade if you're a lesbian and stuff mm-hmm. like that, you know, because a lot of guys think that in the trade.
Yeah.
They think, well, you know, you got to be a lesbian to be the one to be in this trade and stuff like that. If you don't have to have that type of mentality, that type of life, that type of lifestyle, whatever, you don't have to be that. Mm-hmm. You could just want to do, you know, work with your hands and build and do whatever you want to do, you know, whoever wants to do it and however you want to do it, you know. So you don't have to be in some little box that people put you in for you mm-hmm. to be able to do this. So.
So when you look at your career and the satisfactions of your life and your accomplishments, you said you don't have a daughter, but if you did, do you think this would be a good path for her?
She wouldn't have a choice. Somebody would have to inherit this business. So, you know, whatever child I had would be inheriting this. You know, unless I sold it before they got big. But no, they wouldn't have, well, no, their life is about choices.
Right.
life is about choices, and that would be their choice. But I would hope that their choice would be to continue on to what I had started.
For so long, it's been father-son trade.
Exactly.
About time.
Why can't it be daughter-daughter? Even daughter-son. Mother-son, mother-daughter. I don't care. Whatever. Yeah. You know, whoever is there to carry it on, that's who needs to be there. So, I have no problem with that. Because now, you know, it is becoming a father-daughter trade. So, don't get me started. And you know, it has been that way. Mm-hmm. So, but still, true daughters that know the trade, mm-hmm. you know, that type of stuff. Not just I got my daughter in this, you know, I sent her to college and now she can run the business, mm-hmm. you know. And I'm not saying that that's not right, mm-hmm. but at the same time, yeah. you know. I guess because I'm one of those, do you know what you're really doing? You know, an engineering degree can only show you what should happen on paper. It doesn't tell you what happens out in the field. Mm-hmm. So, you know, and of course I'm a little prejudiced when it comes to that point. Just overlook that part. So, you know, because.
Well, I thank you very much for taking your time and sharing.
You're welcome. Happy holidays.